I often say that about the Northwest. I don't know whether it's higher than anywhere else, but certainly it can be very stressful in this sort of situation where, for instance, a lot of people living in caravans and the pressure that that puts on the family.
What about some elderly people? It's sort of one of those towns without any of many elderly people, isn't it?
That's
Can you retire? Do you aim to retire up here?
I haven't really thought about it. I love the place and I'd like to retire here, but we don't own a house here and the cost of building is, you know, pretty high, and also the cost of living is quite exorbitant. And
on the pension?
Yes.
You're living on the old age pension, say, or above super.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, my husband is not in a super scheme, so...
No.
I don't know what mine will be as a parliamentarian. I think you have to do about 3 or 4 terms before you get any reasonable pension or payment.
So in fact, an ordinary working bloke and his wife would find it very difficult to retire
here.
Unless you sort of had a little house in Roebourne or somewhere, unless you had
Is
land expensive at Roebourne?
No, it's not too bad. But the houses are quite dear. And then there's the other little community of Point Sampson. That's an ideal spot for retired people. There's quite a few old people out there. But because it is such a beautiful spot, the cost of land and building out there is quite, you know, high.
Someone think it was $40,000 to buy a seafront block in Port Sampson.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
Yeah, it seems outrageous. And there wouldn't be much in the way of town services on, would there?
I mean, they've only had the water and the electricity connected in the last... say, 8 years or whatever it was.
It's a real problem because when you work... So people who work here and lived in company houses or state houses all their life, and they go to Perth and they say they can get another state house, are going to be faced, when they retire, are going to be faced with buying or acquiring some sort of housing in Perth. And that could be very expensive, couldn't it?
Not as expensive as here, and so a lot of people do leave at that particular stage in their life.
It means daughters or people who want to leave home or families broke up or grandparents, there's none of that sort of support that sometimes goes.
No, we're one generation towns, and that sort of put a lot of pressure on the government and the shires to provide things like daycare, which, you know, people without that extended family tend to need more often.
What about things like, unless there's a drop-in centre for young people, Graham runs, what about unemployed, what do people do? Say if kids, quite often when kids are unemployed, they fall out at home because the parents find them underfoot and annoying them, and the aggravation that everyone else in the house is working and why aren't you, and the kids get involved and don't even want to help wash the dishes sort of thing. And I mean, it does create... But what happens to those kids? Is there a place?
As you say, there's the drop-in centre for, activity-type things.
They?
But there's also now a youth accommodation house, which has been set up by the same group. And that need has arisen for the very things that, you know, you're talking about.
Well, Graham said that it's only a sort of a fairly short-term thing because there's constant pressure. So I suppose those kids would probably have to go to Perth or somewhere else eventually.
I think it does tend to lead to young people leaving the area and leaving their home, perhaps, you know, earlier than they would normally do. If you're unemployed in this sort of place and there's no alternative accommodation, you know, and I suppose they see the city as the land of plenty, really, in terms of being able to get a cheap room and lots of, if it's not, may not, you know, always be easy to get a job, but there's lots of opportunities that you can go in and apply for jobs.
A group of unemployed people, see, in Melbourne, unemployed young people band together and rent a house, but you wouldn't be able to afford it here, would you? If it's $100 a week for a room.
Yeah, see, I don't think it... I mean, you'd have to have too many people.
That's right.
And that would be sort of...
Impossible.
You know, yes. And so I think, you know, if they were going into that sort of thing, they'd probably be better off in the city.
Yeah.
But then that sort of impacts on your general community here. You're not a normal, natural sort of... community without all the different age groups, and if you lose a lot of your young people and you haven't got too many old people, It's, you know, it's a rather strange sort of situation.
Yes, it is really. It's a company town in a certain sense, even though it's an open town, it was still in many ways a company town in that the companies won't employ you.
Mm.
You know, there's not a great deal else to do, is there?
No, Karratha is picking up a bit now. There's a lot of associated sort of industries. Oh. And I think a town, once it's established and gets to that certain point in terms of a good population, self-generating, you know, I mean, now we've got, for instance, this shopping centre we're in here,
yes,
is an example of, you know, town development, and that in turn creates a few more jobs. Gets away from being simply employed in the salt or iron ore or gas industries.
I don't suppose there's much work in the pastoral industry around here now.
No, that's declined quite considerably in the last, well, I suppose the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, I've noticed, you know, that out here, you don't see any stock around, and as you drive from here to, say, Rover, you don't see any stations that have got animals, don't see any cows or sheep.
Oh, Karratha Station is still pretty active.
Is
I often see cattle,
oh,
but they've got theirs well fenced off.
Yeah.
Then the next station on is Mount Welcome. That's declined a bit. I don't think there's a lot of stock on that, although you sometimes see some on the other side of Roban, which is still their property. You see some sheep and that around. The Karratha Station, I think, is just a family owned one. The Mount Welcome one is now owned by an Aboriginal group in there. I haven't caught up with what they're doing in recent times, but I think they're struggling a bit. They've had
Cattle markets declined.
Mm, and the Mount Welcome was mainly sheep, but I think they've got a bit of a mixture at the moment. But they are really struggling. They had a bad cyclone a couple of years ago, which wiped out all their windmills, and that's doesn't help things.
Much. Do you get many cyclones here?
Yes. Yeah, we usually have warnings, a lot of cyclone warnings each season, which is roughly November to April time. It can occur slightly outside that period.
Are these houses good for cyclones? I mean, are they sort of cyclone proof?
Oh yeah, that's what adds to the building costs, is that, you know, the roof, for instance, is built to withstand winds of a certain height, and the majority of places are pretty well placed. Mm. I mean, every now and then you get a really severe cyclone which damages a few places, and of course if your trees and that go over and they're too close to the house, that can cause damage. But generally they are built specifically for the cyclonic times.
One of the sorts of things that, as a Member of Parliament, sort of, you know, personal things that sort of you get to help, have to help with or advise with, is there a lot do people just arrive here, for instance, and have no money, you know, without to get a job, hoping to get a job and not have the money to get out of town and that sort of thing?
Yes, occasionally, particularly with young people who, are sort of, I suppose, the stigma of dole and dole bludging and that, and they're trying to escape from that and prepared to just go anywhere and do anything. You quite often see those sorts of kids coming into Karratha. I remember not long ago I had a couple of kids that had driven up from Geraldton on a motorbike and were only very young and hadn't informed Social Security in Geraldton where to forward their checks on, and so I had to assist by getting them to the local office and having their money transferred up here during their stay. But
a lot of not understanding, isn't there, when people don't know how to work the system, sort of thing?
They didn't realise what they were doing. And, of course, they arrived here, and in the end I finished up giving them some money myself to get them some petrol so they could get up to Headland, because they knew someone up there that could put them up for a couple of weeks while they looked around for work.
Mm.
But, of course, they were quite shell-shocked when they found out what it cost to live here. I mean, they were only camping in the bush or something, but they still had to buy food, and it was quite warm weather at the time, so they found it quite tough.
Yeah, it's worse. I mean, Geraldton's a lot cheaper than here. And
yes, and the climate down there, and they don't have the housing problem, I wouldn't imagine, that we have here.
What do you see as the future? I mean, what are these? I mean, would this town be viable if, say, the mining, you know, declined? I mean, I've noticed all over to the north, you can't imagine why people still live in Berktown, for instance, or Ravenswood in Queensland. You think, well, they're all sort of keeping each other going. I mean, you know, the government's keeping it going, really, by, you know, the post office people spend their money in the shop and the shop, you know.
Yes, well, that tends to happen, although the town, the population of the town would be greatly reduced and a lot of businesses would go out of business. That tends to happen, is that people establish themselves and they manage to keep going.
Government centre.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, Roven was here for over 100 years, seemingly with nothing except a bit of tourism and the pastoral industry and, you know, the odd bits and pieces to keep it going. And that really is a government town because it's got a permanent Aboriginal population. There are all the various departments that have to keep going and so on.
So in fact it might keep going, but it is likely at a considerably lower rate?
Yes, yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. It's a bit of luck it won't happen, but also, do you think tourism is one of those things everyone sort of, it's like a pie in the sky, you know, we'll get the tourists up here. Has tourism become a big thing?
It's slowly increasing. We really need more infrastructure, you know, designed specifically for tourists. I mean, at the moment, I think the majority of tourists who come up here come in a car, towing a caravan, and I don't know, I suppose that's been established over the years because there's no cheap accommodation around the place. So that's the main group of tourists that they'd be catering for at the moment, but what they are looking to getting established, and of course it means a lot of gambling on the part of investors, I suppose, is to establish some different tourist packages whereby you might have tourists fly in the same way that they go over to Bali or somewhere and stay in a hotel and maybe have a package of fishing tours out to the islands or bus tours over to the gorges at Whitnam and things like that.
We were having this experience of trying to find, we wanted to go up to the Mitchell Plateau, and so there was only when we got here, I mean, there was one tour, which was $1,800 from Broome, and that was all, you know, it was only when we got here we discovered that you could hire a four-wheel drive in Broome two people and go, and it's going to cost us, what, $700 instead.
Yes.
You know, so you do need that information.
Well, in recent times they've established a Pilbara Travel Association and they're fairly closely linked now with the Tourism Commission in Perth, and they've had a couple of presentations down around Perth to promote the Pilbara as a place to come and, gather all the information to pass on to people down there.
But it never seems to get to where you want. I mean, you know,
no,
you can't make a big publicity campaign.
That's right, and of course that takes money, and there isn't a lot of money around for that type of thing.
No, on the other hand, they could probably think smaller, like little ads and things like the RACV Journal and that, you know, you can hire a car in Broome, we can do up your special tour for two or three people.
Yes.
And so, it's funny, we found the only thing we get was the big glossy brochures, and people, I think that probably the tourism people always think too big and you've got to have, you know, coloured glossy stuff. You know?
Yeah, that may be that the promotional side of things has got ahead of reality in terms of what, you know, is here and what you can do.
Well, $1,700, you know, and it was only sort of once a month and that sort of thing. If you'd known that there was that flexibility, for the owner was saying her mum wanted to go on a tour and she didn't know about the sort of thing being, you have to get here and find out
from the locals.
Hesitate to get here. I mean, if I wasn't working here, I wouldn't have been coming up just to find out what I could do when I got here.
No, that's true.
And also tourism's become many ways, so it seems to ruin the things that you want to go and see. You know, you want to go and see old Broome, you discover they're tidying up the graveyard to make it lovely for the tourists,
Well, I'm actually heading a task force to restore buildings at Cossack at the moment.
Oh, yes.
And that's quite fascinating. Mm. And we recently had the State Planning Commission prepare a report on, you know, what ought to be done within the future to preserve it. And they have actually recommended against any permanent accommodation, because the local committee were sort of, they had this idea that they'd like to return it to a living town. and that would be a good way of looking after the place and keeping an eye on what tourists did when they got there and that, but I don't think that would happen. And it doesn't sort of fit in with the plan that they've got for Point Sampson at the moment. And so the State Planning Commission has recommended against that. They want to just keep it strictly for a tourism recreational place.
Where, well, you can have dances and things out there. And
oh, yeah, well, they're having a bush dance, shortly, right. Fiddler's Green's coming up.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're always marvellously successful. It's a wonderful spot, and it would be a shame if it were spoiled by overdevelopment.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, I shouted when we were in Broome for some time in 69, and I must admit, I shouted when I saw the telephone boxes in Broome on television.
That's funny you should mention that. I was just having a quiet giggle to myself when I was driving down the road the other day, and that Chinese restaurant just as you go around the corner in Balmoral.
Right, that's where I went.
It's got these little green tile things.
And yes. The Chinese restaurants in Broome were made of tin, but they were very good food. I think that's awfully important to sort of try and keep it low key, because people really don't want to see tidied up and you want to see much more, what it was like.
Yes.
You want to go there for the difference, but the locals always think you have to make it clean and shiny and the same.
Definitely that's not happening at COSAC. We're being very careful.
Can I tell you, I was interested, I read an article in Geo last month about COSAC, about these artists. Actually, it was written a couple of years ago, clearly, because these artist people were still living near the fan ranks, I think.
That's right, yeah.
And, but it was really interesting, this whole history of, and it was written by Kathy, by Van Rank, this whole history of COSAC, she never mentioned the Purling or the Aboriginals. Oh, she mentioned it in passing, but I mean, COSAC was the beginning of the destruction of the Aboriginals in the North.
Yes, of course it was.
Haslack wrote a fascinating thing on COSAC, and anything that's going to be keep COSAC going should have a proper and truthful account of the Aboriginals.
Yes, I quite agree.
This is sort of falsifying history by making it all tacky and pretty.
I guess that's the way history's been written in the past, is that it's always from the white person's perception and what happened to them.
Right.
And because Aboriginal people have never had, a written language, and have never, it's all sort of been passed down by word of mouth over generations, it's very difficult to ferret out those sort of stories.
Yeah, well, I think Haslack wrote this, and I've got quite a lot on tape, actually.
Because they would have landed, COSAC was the first place, and then Roebourne was the first town in the northwest. They obviously moved away from the coast.
I interviewed a number of people, of Aboriginals and people in the pearling industry in Broome when I was there in 69, got them on tape. And I think it was old Paddy Rowe was telling me something about his mum, had been a skin bearskin diver there for the COSAC, and wasn't deep diving. They came up without anything, they hit him over the head with the oar and sent him down again, it was really critical. And in Coonadoo, Catherine Susanna Pritchard's book, in the end, Coonadoo ends up in COSAC, sort of a prostitute for the
industries.
Yes. It's very, very interesting, the whole real story of the North is being hidden and carted up and frittered away. Yeah, it really could be good if you could
It says no charge for electricity. There always has been a small charge for electricity, and the water also. I was part of the when I worked for the Personnel and Town Services Superintendent, we went through this exercise of gradually introducing payment for use of water over a certain number of kilolitres or whatever they call it.
Is that with all the companies?
No, I'm particularly referring to Cliffs here, because you're sort of talking about Kanawanika and Wickham.
That's
And so while it would have been free at first, in this day and age, that stopped. And I think that's probably part of what led me to believe that the company was fairly tough. We went through that exercise. We did another exercise which cut down the amount of food that was taken out to the on-site messes. And so, I never at any stage considered that The company was a soft touch. I was reckon that would...
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you thought that, because I was saying you mainly.